Hello, welcome back to the End Evil Podcast. Evil is the destruction of freedom. End Evil Podcast is dedicated towards working towards freedom, working towards truth, and helping other humans and ourselves to better understand and align ourselves with the concept of natural law. And that is recognizing the pre-existing, inherent, non-man-made, binding conditions, immutable, unchangeable conditions that dictate the consequences of human behavior. So, thanks for coming back this week. This is an exciting topic on symbology. And I wanted to start right off by a quick delve into the grammar of the situation. I believe that we should teach the trivium at a very young age as a model of how to think to young people. And those of us who come to understand the deeper levels of occult secrets in this world need to understand the grammar of symbolism and symbology in order to have a more in-depth conversation and in order to speak to each other on a deeper level than just words can do. So if you haven't checked out freedomundernaturallaw.com, I would recommend to head over there and learn about the trivium, the knowledge, understanding, wisdom, input, processing, and output process of thinking. But this presentation today is all about the grammar aspect, the first step. I'm going to lay out all the tools and the words that we're going to use in the upcoming conversation as we study symbology, which is the study of symbols. Now, symbolism is basically the usage of symbols. And don't get me wrong, part of symbology is symbolism. And inside of symbolism, we find symbology too. But it's just like many of the words we're going to discuss, there are small differentiations and slight differences, nuances, perspectives, ways of looking at things, so we can get more in detailed and we can cover more ground by being more exact and technical with our words and our meanings and our understandings and our ability to understand things that are bigger and more complex than just words, and that's symbols. Okay, what is a symbol? Let's move on to our next slide to discuss that. Symbol, it seems pretty unanimous as I was looking up the definitions to the etymology. The etymology comes from Latin and Greek and symbolum or symbolon, and it could be seen as a permit, a license, or simply that which is thrown together. Thrown together or cast together, such as S-Y-N prefix and B-O-L suffix. Is that right? The second part. And sin meaning together, S-Y-N, and B-O-L meaning to throw, to reach. Throwing things together could also mean like contrasting, comparing. A token used in comparisons to determine if something is genuine. I really like that description. An object standing for or representing something sacred, moral, or intellectual. A written character mark or a sign which stands for something. So a symbol stands for something. A watchword. Something is inferred because of the one thing. This is really cool. The AI definition came up with this. The word symbolism comes from the Latin word symbolum, which is derived from the Greek word symbolon. Symbolon means sign and refers to an object that is cut in half to create a sign of recognition when the two pieces are put back together. For example, in ancient Greece, ambassadors from the allied city-states would be given a shard of pottery that was inscribed and then broken into two pieces as a record of their alliance. So if we can imagine truth, which is whole and complete in and of itself, but here we are often trying to look at it from a unique perspective or from only a partial understanding of the whole, and therefore we're only looking at a piece often. So we use symbols to comparatively recognize that there's a bigger whole that we're trying to look at often in the world or in what we're talking about. So to go a little deeper and understand, make our understanding greater, I looked up synonyms for symbology. There was a longer list than the six words that I chose, but these six words, I think, are the best synonyms for symbology, other than representative, which is another good word for symbology, or I had one other, maybe it'll come back to me. But I like representative is a good word, too. It's something that represents something else. And all these words have similar aspects and overlaps. Sometimes I'll use some of these words somewhat interchangeably because they have such similar meanings and definitions. But for the sake of this presentation, I'm offering us tools to be more exact in our language. And since it's the grammar stage of the trivium, let's not just run into processing and thinking and disagreeing on what we're talking about without clearly defining some words so that we then can use those clear definitions to have more in-depth and complete conversation going forward. So imagery, let's talk about imagery. It's not an exact synonym for symbology. Well, it is, you know, it's a type of symbology, imagery. And I chose a very striking image to make a point here. But imagery just means a visually descriptive or figurative language, especially in a literary work. So imagine you never saw the picture that's on this slide. Perhaps you are just listening to my audio. There is some water that's about chest height on a young girl who's looking for help. She's looking for her mother-like, caring other friend who's named Ripley in this movie Aliens, and there's this giant dinosaur-like reptile-like creature rising from the water behind the young girl, and the young girl's clutching her little doll at her chest. She doesn't know that this menacing alien's right behind her. What does that connote? You know, what does that make you think about? What type of, when I'd make that description or you were to read those words that I just said, You would get a feeling of fear. This little girl's getting approached by a big, giant, terrible alien that wants to get her. And she's not completely aware that's right behind her. So that brings a part of fear. We worry about the little girl when we see the image of this situation because she's a little girl and little girls are innocent. And that's why she's clutching her little doll. She's scared, right? So that gives you a feeling of fear. This is imagery. We're giving you all these thoughts and feelings, and I thought a further symbol we see in this image here is her clutching the doll, which represents her caring for the child, just like she would want her mother to do for her, and that's what she needs and wants. And so she's seeking care, and she's in a state of fear and innocence. And you know, there might be other ways to describe this particular image, but the point is, a descriptive or figurative language brings about a feeling. It also brings about a logical conclusion, and that gives one a greater picture of what we're doing. So that's a great understanding of imagery. It can be done with images. It can be done with sound. Imagery can connote feeling and explain the logic of a situation. Let's move on to metaphor. What is a metaphor? A metaphor is a thing regarded as representative or symbolic of something else, especially something abstract. The metaphor I chose for this image is a picture of what we would call the undead, the zombies. There's so many movies that have come out in the past 10 years and shows and television shows about zombies. And what does that represent? Is that a metaphor in our society for the unawakened? What the occultists, the dark occultists, as Mark calls them, calls the undead? Are some of us not quite living our life at full vigor and doing everything we can to make the most of our life with a carpe diem type attitude? Are a lot of people out there alive but not really living? Yes, that's why I chose this as a metaphor, because you know what I'm talking about. This image and this idea I'm sharing that we see in so many movies and shows, it represents, it connotes this feeling, this understanding that it's possible for humans to be alive but not really living, or sick in some way to where they're still there, but we're afraid of them. And it's a scary thought, right? To be undead. Anyway, it is a representative idea that is symbolic, and it's something abstract. I think that's a key part of metaphor. You can take sort of a bigger, grander idea, like I'm talking about, a whole societal trend, and we can share an idea about that. All right, on to the next synonym, which is allegory. And an allegory is very similar, often almost the same as a metaphor, but it's different. And here's how an allegory is different and unique. Allegory is the expression of truths or generalizations about human existence by means of symbolic fictional figures and their actions. It encompasses such forms as fable and parable. I chose Robin Hood specifically because it's a storyline that has been told over and over, as you can see all many of the iterations, different movies, cartoons, books over the years have described a similar story of this Robin Hood character who, obviously, there's some sort of tyrant that's stealing from the poor, and Robin Hood comes in as the hero and shows people that it's right to defend yourself when someone is tyrannically stealing from you by taking back what's rightfully yours. And we all know deep down that it's wrong to steal, and that someone who stands up for the innocent and takes things back is not a thief, but someone that we would look up to and see as a hero. And that's what that story really teaches. It's a parable, right? And it's a little more complex, like a metaphor, because it's an abstract idea and concept. But it has to do with, like I talked about in the beginning, natural law and human behavior. And we understand this allegory on a deep level, but somehow we're still afraid of what it actually means in our day-to-day life. Otherwise, we would behave much more like the Robin Hood. And that's just a comparison, right? A comparison. Well, here, let me make a comparison. A consideration or estimate of the similarities or dissimilarities between two things or people. That's one of the unique things about comparison. We can compare all kinds of things, and we can even try to compare things that aren't necessarily the same or alike. It's just something we can do to find parallels and to get more detailed in a very particular way. As you can see here, I chose a bunch of images, and I repeated them next to each other. Some of the images are a crowd at a religious event. Some of the images are a crowd at a political event. I challenge you to compare how different they are. Are they similar or are they dissimilar? How dissimilar are they really? I myself think this is an interesting comparison to make because I don't even have to tell you the conclusion. I think by looking at it yourself, you will see the similarities and you will have a harder time finding the dissimilarities. But I will let you be the judge. You get to do the comparison. That's the fun of a comparison. We can put pictures together or ideas together and let the listener choose and make their own comparison. So that's a great type of symbolic representation. One of my favorite is the analogy. The analogy is a comparison between two things, typically for the purpose of explanation or clarification. We can make a detail, or we can help someone to understand something that otherwise could be quite tricky to understand without a good analogy. And here's an analogy for what I'm talking about with stealing. It's interesting that we might look at the picture on the left, a day-to-day theft robber, as a really bad thing. Here's a guy trying to take some money from a woman's purse, maybe her phone, maybe her credit cards. How terrible. But then on the right, we see a smiling woman that we would normally think of as an upstanding citizen. And yet, like right above her head, she proudly calls herself a tax collector. That's Suzanne the tax collector, a statist lifetime robber. Someone that's willing to steal from you for their entire life and your entire life and never stop and be proud of it. So that's a comparison. That's a comparison between two things to help you clarify or understand the difference between types of theft and robbery. And let's move on to the next and last of the words I chose. Simile. Simile often has the word like. A simile in a poem or a literary is often a like or like to something else. A figure of speech involving the comparison of one thing with another thing of a different kind, used to make a description more emphatic or vivid. So I chose things that are similar or like. I chose actors and politicians. What's the difference between, let's make a comparison with a simile. Are they like? Actors are like politicians. In fact, they often are the same, one and the same. But there's a difference. Actors like to admit that they're lying, because acting is a fun way of lying that's not hurtful, because you admit you're doing it. Where politicians act like they're not lying. So that concludes the basic types of symbolism, because we are right now getting into some symbology. We're studying the symbols. But now I would like to end this little presentation and open the door for some conversation. And to start that off, I'm going to show you a little artistic moment. As I was working on this presentation on a camping trip yesterday, or that was earlier today, I came across this page I was reading in a book by J.W. Phipps, which is called The Book of Wonderful Suffering. And here's what he wrote about symbols. He wrote, "Symbols reused throughout time and prehistory speak not to our conscious thinking mind, but to our primordial self, the driving factor of all human beings. After all, the definition of using language is strictly attuned to something's limitation within nature. To name something is to negate it to a finite aspect of our perception. Symbols, like the Ouroboros, the serpent consuming its own tail, the cross unifies the four directions where Jesus left his physical body, the Hamsa hand, the eye of Horus, the all-seeing eye with the triangle or pyramid, the idea of human forms with animal heads, all the way to sacred geometry and sigils. They are meant to represent a concept within the context of their teaching. They have different meanings to each viewer and change and evolve in meaning per teaching and according to where the student is on his path of learning." So I could see where that could create some disagreement in some folks' minds, but I really appreciate the way that he worded this, and I think there's much truth here. I think that oftentimes what makes a symbol so powerful, or a group of symbols, and a good example of this is tarot cards, or tarot cards, I like to say tarot, is that they can have a different meaning to each viewer in the context of the question being asked in one's mind, and then the context of that person's body and hand intermingling with the cards, and at that time and moment and place, when you look at it, it could have a different meaning, where you could turn a different card in a different time and place and extract a different meaning depending on all that, like I'm saying, context. And I do think that symbols are very deep down. And when we use words, it is somewhat limiting, because symbols are even deeper and they can contain hundreds of thousands of words in one symbol. And later we can talk about archetypes and sigils, and that is even a whole nother layer of complexity that we can get into, and flags and those types of things. But for now, I think that's a great jumping off point for discussion. And I hope to find some other folks who are interested in and willing to engage in a roundtable discussion. Look in the link should be in the chat, the live chat. I know how that happened. Thanks, Will. Can you guys hear me now? Yep, I'm getting a yes. Okay, it looks like we got some friends joining me here today. Join me in the live discussion. Thank you for joining me. Evil's the destruction of freedom, as I said before. I'd love to point that out. And I have opened the live roundtable. Folks, go ahead and look in the chat, and you can find that link if you want to join us for this conversation. And thanks for joining me. It looks like I got Will and Jerry and Marvin from Join the Internet here. And before we get started on that, I just wanted to share that I'm opening a new sort of doorway for the End Evil podcast. I'm always looking for ways to get some involvement from you listeners. So this is an easy thing you can do from your own home, from your own computer or phone. You can help create slides that could be presented on the End Evil podcast, or take clips out of shows we've done in the past, or if you have something awesome that you think goes along with the topics we're covering, create a clip or create a slide and submit it to the show. You can send it to my email, chris@chrisjansen.com. And I also wanted to point you guys to a cool episode I just did with the Girls Club. And you look on Sarah Cross's or my Facebook, and you can find episode number 9 about self-defense. So, thanks for joining me, guys. Let's begin this conversation. Who would like to say something first about what we've talked about, the grammar behind symbolism? That all makes some sense. Will, you?
Sure. Yeah.
You want to pop in first there?
So, absolutely. Being a father, the grammar stage is that base level, that fundamental. It's 0 through about 8, 9, or 10. This is what parents could be working on, the grammar. It's connecting the dots. It's gathering all those little pieces, understanding the list of in your little pre-video right there, which was great, the similes, allegories, symbols. This is all kinds of stuff. These are the individual pieces that one needs to understand and know and incorporate. Because if we think about consciousness itself, it being pattern recognition, this is the inner workings of what pattern recognition is. This is how you connect the dots. And in a world with a lack of understanding cause and effect and connecting the dots, most people are missing the grammar stage as well. It's being spoon-fed to people where they're just taking, the social engineer's grammar that's been handed to them, and they're not actually implementing their own willpower through knowledge of the grammar of all these, subdivided compartments that can connect the dots and get someone to understand causal factors, the why, and what is going on. It's understanding the language of the universe, of nature, of yourself. And it's profound. It's such a fundamental, foundational category that I think a lot of people believe they know, but they don't really. They haven't. It's just very surface level. They haven't dived completely into it, getting into the occultism of this topic as well. That's my intro. I'll leave it there.
Thanks, Will, for kicking it off. I want to remind people too that I shared chrisjansen.com. I'd like people to go there and sign up for my email list. I'm going to start, kind of giving some special offers to people that take the time to do that, that really want to be part of making a difference in this world. And I think speaking out is huge, energetically, physically, mentally, spiritually, to speak out what you want into this world. That's what we were talking about with finding words, clarity, like Jerry was with us on that conversation with the Warriors. And we're kind of doing this. I've been thinking this through in sort of a step-by-step method, because words are types of symbols and it's building blocks, right? Like when you join part of a military, they teach you how to take apart a weapon, and they teach you every piece of that weapon and how to put it back together quickly, so you're proficient with that weapon. Well, your words are
weapons and the bullets and all that are understanding symbols and the different types of symbols and how they're used. The more you understand that, the more powerful your speaking is going to be going forward. You want to reflect on that at all, Jerry? Thanks for joining
us. Hey, guys.
Oh, I should point out too, hey, thank you, Jerry. If people don't know, Jerry takes part of his free time every week helping do uploads and work behind the scenes for the And Evil podcast. And he's like a real warrior on that. And I really appreciate it. So everybody, you know, send some gratitude and thanks to Jerry for that hard work he's been doing. Anyway, go ahead, Jerry.
It's the least I can do, Chris. And when I first met you online, I was still in the military, in the Navy. And I was just thinking whether I learned how to take apart a weapon, at least a, what was it, M9, I think, and put it back together. I don't know. But I noticed Will's shirt has some symbols on it. It's pretty cool.
I figured I'd throw this on for the occasion.
Appropriate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Lots of synchronicity there, the four elements. We were talking about that in our last meeting, Chris, how Derek talked about that recently, and I thought that might be a good topic of discussion to talk about the fire signs, because my birthday is in 4 days. I know that's all I'm going to say. And the intro was amazing, Chris. I learned so much, and I was a bit distracted when you were going over the, what was it, the undead, but I sort of hovered over the image and I read it, but I might have to go back to that again because that was very powerful.
Well, that one was really about metaphor.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you know what a metaphor is, but I just used that as a sample metaphor, the idea of the zombies, you know, which is something we're going to talk about real soon with the Warriors. The zombies are like kind of like a motif in Hollywood and stuff. It's like a theme. It's something you see, right? But you can kind of read between the lines in your mind and think, what does it mean? What does a zombie actually represent? And it's metaphorically representing what Mark Passio talks about, the undead or the unawakened. Or even in movements for self-help and stuff, they'll call it like becoming enlightened or awakened within yourself, and many people that have experienced living life to its fullest, or like carpe diem, that's so different from the deadness you feel if you're not feeling that. And so that's a good metaphor. And so I just use that picture and that concept to highlight what a metaphor means, right? You know, that's a good metaphor. That's all. Yeah, Marvin, what do you think, bro? Good to see you. Thanks for coming.
Hey, thank you for allowing us to be on. I always really like these opportunities to hear from you guys, but also share a couple of things that hopefully are useful to somebody. I wanted to say it's fascinating how underrated language is, because like as you were speaking, I was thinking of just that term grammar Nazi, you know, when somebody cares about these sorts of things that you're talking about. Metaphors and similes and syntax and all of that stuff. And somebody might look at someone who's precise with their words and say something like, you're such a grammar Nazi. So I think that speaks to just that culture that exists of anti-intellectualism. This is part of why I'm on chats like this and doing the work that I'm now doing, because language is such a powerful tool, and it is our way of trying to capture something that we can't really express with words, but we do our darndest. And it's something that can make people really uncomfortable or really comfortable. And it's so underrated how just the way that you arrange your words, the tone in which you say your words with, your body language when you're speaking words, et cetera, create such differences in how people respond to you. So I think it's always commendable when people want to talk about language and symbols and all of that stuff, because it's super underrated. So,
absolutely. You know, I forgot the word you used there. That was a pretty good word, anti-intellectualism, right?
Yeah.
I can remember When I was like 15, 14, somewhere in there, I remember realizing, because my dad was a person who loved words, he would actually, when my friends would come to the house, he would be like, word for the day. And he would like bring up some word or make us look up a word in the dictionary. And my friends kind of got into it, and we had fun with it. Like we were, plethora, I remember, was one of them. We were using that for weeks, you know. And but yeah, like it comes across, I noticed in public that a lot of people didn't like the way my dad talked. They couldn't understand what he was saying. And some people would actually get mad or take offense, like he was talking down to them, because they didn't understand what he was talking about. And I noticed in different social situations, I started dumbing down my own personal grammar and language so that I could fit in better. I was worried that I was going to come across sounding too dorky, too smart. I didn't want to be a nerd. I mean, I knew I was a nerd, but I didn't want to
be a geek
more than necessary. So I actually dumbed down my language for years, and you still sort of hear this gangster kind of part of me that is just part of who I am because of where I grew up and that type of thing. But there is a pressure in, I think, maybe, I don't want to say lower class, but lower income, probably more realistically, neighborhoods and situations where there's a weird pressure to actually dumb yourself down so you can fit in with the others, which is scary true. And I also wanted to comment something Will said. I had a fantastic conversation with Brandon Martin today, and we're going to air that next week. And we were talking about starting from being an infant, how important symbology is. And that really tied into something you were saying there with children and that learning process of symbols and how that works. And I think that's a huge aspect of this conversation. But yeah, it's good to see you guys in the chat. Leslie, CB, Patty, Sarah. Yeah, I love seeing people involved in the conversation. There's Libercast. Thanks for joining us today. Fred, always good to have you here. The link is in the chat there if anyone wants to scroll up and if anyone else wants to get in on this conversation. But what more can we say about Will? Oh, Will, you got something to say? Jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, a couple things. Touched on some things that I wanted to mention. And speaking of language and words, words are the most powerful symbols, right, that we can utilize and we can use. Language and words is like, it's that bridge from the mental realm, emotional and physical realm. It unites. It's the trifecta, because we're using words from the mental space. It carries a vibration, and we are projecting that out. It's also an action, because we are speaking that into existence. And this is why all the ancient mystery traditions, they were oral traditions. From my research, it was an oral tradition for thousands of years before writing actually came into play, right? Because you almost dilute a concept or a meaning when you are writing, because now you're subjected to the limitations of the person writing, interpretation as well, and you don't get tone and vibration and frequency when you're speaking that into existence. So, you know, mythology, allegory, the archetypal arena realm was really big for the ancients and in the mystery traditions and in occultism, right? So this is where we see that. So words, the most powerful symbols, for sure. And this is why it's important to understand etymology and origins, getting down to what I like to call the root vibration of a word. And sure, words can kind of shift and change, but understanding the roots and the families of the word of language and just grammar, the composition properties of grammar, is extremely important. Getting down to meaning and purpose, 100%. I was not always like that in my teenage years, like high school and even kind of getting into junior college. I barely read a book. I had poor grammar. It's something I'm always constantly working on. Now I'm a word junkie. I see a word when I'm reading and I'm not familiar with it. Bam. I want to look up the etymology. I want to know its properties, its breakdown, its roots, all that kind of stuff. This is like ammo, spiritual ammo, for the mind and the soul. And I love diving into language. It's fascinating. And when we put these words together, we are creating spiritual sigils that can be used. And this is why the voice and speaking out is crucial in this day and age.
Yeah, that quote, I shared it for a second there. I still haven't come completely terms with where Restream has changed things up here, but I shared that one quote from the book. If anybody's interested, I really come to like this YouTube channel called Library of the Untold. And Joey Phipps had this book he published, and the Book of Wonderful Suffering, which I haven't even finished. I'm still working on it. I take it with me all over the place and read it little by little because I like it so much. But he points out that to name something is to negate it to a finite aspect of our perception. And as soon as you define something, it becomes more defined. And it's kind of like I've described with the self-work. When we learn about ourself, it's a chiseling down. It's a removing of, you know, like you can imagine a stone that you're chiseling. You're creating the beauty. You're finding the beauty within. And that is not a bad thing, you know, to negate something necessarily. A lot of times we solve a mystery by finding out what something is not. And so words define things specific. And as soon as you make something specifically defined, then it is specifically not something that you haven't defined. So if you've created this void of sorts, you know, limitation, which is sort of an interesting opposite dualistic type thing to say. But anyone else want to comment on things that Will said or new thoughts?
It's fascinating on just all of this too, how powerful people know this, obviously. It's obvious to us, but this is why we see symbols everywhere. This is why politicians like do dumb their themselves down. Like you've probably seen the examples when, like, you know, Hillary Clinton or whatever, or Kamala Harris or whoever, you know, they just switch their accents up when they're in front of a specific group of people and start to talk a certain way. And things like that have worked for a long time. They still work. So I think it just speaks to how powerful that can be, because people just kind of assume that that is authentic. People like us start to see through it, and I think more of that is happening across the country, but it's just something to know too, because to the smart people, they know. So they're really particular about the words. They really put time into the words that they use. I just heard yesterday actually, about something about just 9/11 and the research that they did at Ground Zero, and they used like a term of we didn't uncover any explosives, and it was on a space I was on X, and this guy was saying, look at how they're saying that. They didn't say they didn't find any. They said they didn't uncover any. So they're just telling you that they didn't do something. I haven't done the research into that. I'm going to, but I just thought that was fascinating, if that's a something that turns out to be interesting. So
fascinating. It's like, you know, the political campaigns, they always use these key words, change, or, you know, unity or something like that. It's just, it's all sorcery and word magic. And the more you can uncover the meaning behind those words, then the better your arsenal and your armor and shielding is, for sure. Clarity of meaning, the actual definition of definition.
There's an interesting question by Leslie. She says, so then does objectivity have something to do with definition? And that I'm really glad she brought that up, because in my discussion with Brandon Martin today, I actually stopped and I was like, wait, we got to kind of define objectivity and subjectivity, because I don't know. I think of myself for years, those words kept confusing me. I knew what they meant, but every time it brought up, I'd have to kind of like re-go through it. I'm like, wait, objective means you're kind of looking at it from an outside point of view. Oh, like outside. That's kind of how I started remembering, you know. Subjective means how I feel about it. It's like expressed through my own interpretation. I'm the subject, right? I'm subjectively describing something, how it makes me feel. But we do have this amazing ability as humans to kind of like look at things from outside of ourselves. Look at how people write books. They can write a book from an objective, like an omnipotent point of view, as if, you know, the story, they aren't even part of the story, right? We have the ability to think that way too. And I think why some people have trouble with the concept of objectivity is because we are subjective beings. Everything we experience is subjective. We're experiencing it. But it's an advanced skill to practice being objective, to attempt as much as you possibly can to remove your emotions and feelings and look at something from an outside point of view. And so I think the more we're able to do that with how we use words, take away our personal feelings about it and look at it for what it is, then we're able to become more like sleuths, detectives, and scientists, and not reactive, angry animals, you know? Yeah, I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on objectivity and symbology.
Yeah, may I throw something in there real quick?
Absolutely.
So I'm going to send a thing to the private chat, and just so that you have it, and I'll read it. Chris, you helped me put this together, and Mark Passio, of course. But what it is this is a premise from a proof that I'm working on right now called The Proof of Hidden Ego-Driven Cults. And the first premise of this proof is just me trying to take a really big step back and just start at defining the truth. So it's the truth is only what has happened and what is happening to the best we can say, which people attempt to validate and accept through the phenomena of corroboration. So what this means is I'm trying to combine, you know, obviously that objective element, and this I did get from Mark Passio, which is the truth is what is happening, so that present moment, and what has happened in the past, and that's it. That is all the truth means. But then the challenge that we run into is with just the whole notion of subjective consciousness. So, Chris, that's something that I had asked you about, and you told me the word corroboration. So I ended up just kind of combining the two thoughts because, you know, I thought about it a lot, and that's what ended up making the most sense to me, that we, through this phenomena, that's the only word I can think to use, of corroboration, is how we are able to help each other determine what the truth is. So if I say the sky is blue, you'll agree with me. And so one counter, I guess, call it counter argument, I suppose, it's just more context, is that, you know, due to the nature of consciousness, even with this work, we do ultimately have to admit that we can only say it seems things have happened and are happening. So I'd be curious if you guys have thoughts on that. But words help us to just kind of fill that gap. And I think people then have to do that work of corroboration and assessment in order to determine what they believe is true. And that's where we run into a big problem because people can lie. So this is where I think we all advocate for honesty and truth. So.
Yeah, and the trivium method of truth discovery, you know, the real scientific method and using critical thinking. So that's why that whole category is a necessity. The objectivity and subjectivity, it's such a volatile, you know, topic. People kind of get up in arms. There's both to consider, right? How I look at objectivity is the relationship of consciousness to existence, to the real world, to truth, right? How you said in your statement, which was great. That is the objective aspect of reality. It is truth, what has manifested and is manifesting. Then there's the subjective aspect where I myself can verify through the trivia method, the scientific method, the process of critical thinking. I can verify that. And other people can do the same thing. That's pretty much, you know, the goal of our work, right? We're trying to inspire and educate people. Look, this is the truth. This is how you can find it. This is the method by which you can bring it into your awareness. And then you can align your behaviors and actions to the truth, which is improving your relationship, thus improving our relationship, humanity's relationship to freedom, right? Morality, immorality. So there's always both that have to come into play and understand the objectivity and the subjectivity, because we are subjective individuals in an objective reality. And when I say that, I'm talking about natural law, the laws of nature, meaning this reality operates one way for all human beings. This is the principles, right? And you can reduce that down. You can work, reverse engineer and work your way back up. But in language, if we say that's a tree, the majority of English-speaking people are going to understand exactly the object that we are talking about. Now, that word could, or that symbol could be something different. It could be expressed different in another language. But what it represents is an object in the real world, in existence. So that's the power of, you know, symbols and words and the truth. The truth.
I love that you brought up the tree, Will, because that's where I wanted to go a little bit with my next thing I wanted to say. Behind me, you see my tree of life. And to me, it's a powerful symbol. That's why I've always had it part of this End Evil podcast, because it's the idea of things being interconnected, interwoven, and integrated. And think about all those words: intelligence, integrated, interwoven. Interconnected, right? Communication is so important in our world because we are all different parts of the tree. And here's an example I've given that makes sense. If you were to find a leaf on a forest floor, would you think of the leaf as just being its own thing? It's only a leaf? Or would you know that leaves come from trees, right? It's like Alan Watts says, you know, grapes don't grow on thorns. You know, we don't see trees that grow with the leaves in the ground and the roots up into the sky. You know, I mean, to an extent, anything's possible in this realm, but on the other side of it, things are very structured. Leaves have certain patterns they grow in. And the truth of life is that all things are connected because it all is part of the great one all. And so trying to establish yourself as your own sort of bubble, like materialistic, I'm me and you're you and we're all different and what we do isn't affecting each other and the future of all of our children is a ridiculous thought. It's an asinine thought, but it's been so entrained into people through repetition and symbology that has negative connotations, that's used in a negative way, that this way of thinking, this satanic mindset, has really soaked into the everyday person in a scary way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been kind of revisiting Rudolf Steiner's fantastic work. And, you know, he talks about the concept of Ahriman and Lucifer, Ahriman being the materialistic path for humanity and mindset and worldview. And then Lucifer being what we have now is like the New Age, solipsism and relativism. And it's so, both are so prevalent. They can look at as the left and the right brain as well. So lately I've been noticing, I've been observing just on social media and, you know, other people's content and stuff, and how entrenched the relativism mindset and the solipsistic mindset are so just down in the fundamental levels of how people think. For instance, we don't have to get into this. This is a whole nother, you know, conversation. Quantum, how people talk about quantum entanglement, quantum reality. This was all propagated. It's a huge psyop. If we just define the word quantum means an amount. How many? That's what it means. When relativism, the theory of relativism, and that took off, this is when quantum, the theory of quantum, came out, and it's solely based in relativism and solipsism, that we are each individually creating our own reality. And if I'm not at my house doesn't exist until it's into my field of awareness. So it just goes, my point is that how entrenched, ingrained these ideologies are in, which, you know, they affect basic fundamental operations of human beings. And defining words and getting down to the fundamentals are just so crucial. And I think, you know, people need to continuously revisit. This is why I call myself a word junkie, and I continue to revisit this topic, because you can always evolve your own understanding and your own awareness in this realm. And it's something that I'm just stressing that needs to be on the forefront of people's minds and awareness.
Yeah, I think. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Marvin.
I wanted to introduce another phrase that undermines on purpose the value of words. And it's a phrase that I'm sure maybe we've even used, but it's sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Like, that is something that I heard as a kid. Like, if somebody would make fun of you or something like that, is something a parent might tell a child. But it's such a lie. It's just not true. Even as we, like, grow, maybe it's a platitude or whatever. But I think what that does is it part of a structure that creates a culture of conflict avoidance, again, anti-intellectualism, of just not acknowledging issues that can and do exist. So it's something that I also wanted to point out in that regard, because, you know, clearly people who are, again, in power, they know words are very powerful, so they're able to use them in that way. Somebody who's manipulative is able to take advantage of people in the way that they use words, or they'll, like, you know, online trolls, they use their words because they know that they'll incite an emotional reaction if they say something a certain way. So it's just another example of how the power of words is undermined. Yeah, words can cause serious damage, Patty. That's right. But we're taught that they don't.
Yeah, well, think about the way laws are maintained in our land. It's a threat. It's always, there's words on the signs that are threatening you. Your speed is being, you know, we're keeping an eye on your speed by the air. You know, there's people on the side of the road with guns following your car, you know. It's like there's a subtle symbol out there in the term of a stop sign, right? Which makes sense for us to all stop in certain places so we don't all crash into each other. But when we actually look into that shape, we realize that it's an archetypal shape that has a lot behind it. Why is it red? You know, it's red because it stands out. Where do we see red in nature? You know, we see it like blood, you know, sunset, sunrises. So there's certain feelings or connotations with certain colors and shapes. One I was going to bring up is the eyeball. You know, if you just start noticing eyes, especially in logos, you're going to see, you're going to start seeing eyes everywhere, because there are a lot of eyes on you. There are a lot of eyes on what you're doing and what you're looking at. And so out there symbolically, there's eyeballs everywhere you go looking at you, you know? And, you know, there's just so many of these symbols, and they're used in so many suggestive ways. And then even what we do in the world is always symbolic. Everything we do is a symbolic gesture, right? Like, if you put your hand out like this, what does that mean? Right away, someone goes, oh, that's a symbolic gesture. That means I'm supposed to shake your hand. And people do it so automatically, they don't even think about it. As soon as you see that hand, you just, boop. You know what I mean? So we are controlled by symbols, whether we like it or not, whether it's a stop sign or a handshake or an involuntary turn of the wheel because you see a certain color, right?
Absolutely. Life is symbolic. Life is a symbol, right? The human being represents pure potential of the creative intelligence embodied in manifestation. So it's, I mean, it all comes down to symbols. You can correlate and correspond everything as a symbol, and it will have meaning. Because we're talking about expressions of nature, right? This is what symbols are, and it's an opportunity for us to reason and learn from these expressions and these symbols, right? I mean, not only from pure forms, which would be natural symbols, but the symbols we create as human beings. It's their tools, tool sets for us to evolve and grow. And, you know, the social engineers using certain words and certain symbols. This is why the grammar is so important, because what's the next stage after the grammar? It's logic, or like I like to call, reasoning. So if you don't have your grammar in place, you are going to have poor reasoning. And this is where the social engineers take advantage of the majority of people, because they lack that grammar. They don't understand the symbols and words and language. And therefore, they make their reasoning modality is ineffective and inefficient.
One thing I've noticed in almost every single superhero movie across the board that's come out in the past 10 years, if you look at all into astrology, or you're going to find all these, or the gods of the Greek Roman gods or the Nordic gods, you're going to find all these similarities between astronomy, even astronomy, astrology, and ancient lore of all these cultures. And these same characters and archetypal characteristics show up in all these superhero movies. And so it's kind of fun to actually start looking for symbology in movies, because what a lot of people may not understand is there is sort of a hidden agenda among Hollywood, what do you call them, people that make films, not producers, right? Film directors, right? They have sort of like a, there's a sort of secret unwritten code that directors are always trying to one-up each other's symbolism, and they're trying to embed deeper messages and symbols into their movies for various reasons. But it's a bit of a competition, almost like alchemy. When you see a sign somewhere or a something carved into stone and there's something irregular about it, the person that carved it very purposefully left something irregular so that you recognize there's a puzzle. And that's sort of like there's a secret world behind the world we know. And there's a lot of people that understand these worlds of symbology. And I would recommend just taking some time looking at biblical stories. That's where you're going to get a lot of allegory from. And then Freemasonry, just a basic understanding of Freemasonry and like the first tracing cards, which can all be a lot of that material Brandon Martin covers really well on seedtruth.com, and I'd recommend going there. WillKeller.com, he covers a lot of these things too as well. But I would say, you know, just pick something, whether it's the Bible or pick Rosicrucianism. That's one I'm going to go into next that I'm curious about. But Freemasonry is a really important one. They're like masters of symbology, and that symbology has largely been twisted and used in the past 20, 50, 100 years to do a real number on people, even though a lot of the symbology isn't necessarily meant to manipulate people, but it can be used that way, right? Because like a knife, it's a tool that has sharpness on both sides, and it can cut both ways. Definitely want to open the table to go around one more if you guys got any last words, but I think we're going to call it a little shorter tonight because this is just kind of meant to be grammar introducing this topic, and then the next episodes we're going to get a little more into the logic phase and the rhetoric of symbology, and I'm bringing on a special guest next week, Brandon Martin, a specialist in symbology, and he's also producing, I think it's, he's releasing his new part on his series, which is on symbology, as of tomorrow. So check that out. Yeah, anybody else want to add to what we've said, feel free to finish things up. And
on a film industry, I sent it in the public chat, but speaking of films, the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, if you look at that acronym, is NATAS. Now flip that and see what you get. And again, it's just an example of how these powerful elites in our entertainment and media know how powerful language is, and they almost definitely purposefully are playing with people. So,
absolutely. Yeah, good one. Yeah, closing statement, fantastic episode. I really love this whole category, Chris. I highly recommend people to dive into occultism. And definitely check out Carl Jung's work on symbolism. He's a staple teacher and educator of symbolism in general, because we're talking about symbols are for the metaphysical and the physical domain. So you can learn a lot about yourself, psychology, archetypes, and the symbols that are used. That foundation has to be there on what symbols are and how they are used. And this is the realm of occultism. Every single mystery tradition educates on symbols, what they are, and how they are used. And then something like the Bible has a completely different context to people when you're looking at it archetypal, allegorical, astrotheological, etc., etc. It takes on a whole different form and shape, and many others as well. So, and I wanted to add too, Chris, you said something that had me that thought of natural law was first expressed. The discovery of natural law and the principles of nature have obviously been with humanity since the dawn of time, but it was always in the form of natural lore is how it always was conveyed and discovered, that relationship with nature and with ourselves, and put into stories that convey concepts and meanings and messages. So from natural lore to natural law, how we express it nowadays, in just a different way, same meanings. It's fascinating, and this is why I still visit the ancient teachings of many cultures and civilizations, because they're really, you know, close to the root of just this body of information and wisdom. And again, you need to know the symbols and the allegories and the meanings of what this lore represents. So great show, man. Thanks for having me on, always.
Yeah, Beagle Eye Vision said Cubbyhole Podcast, cubbyhole.com. That's WHOLE. That's Nate Kapp. He's a fantastic person on symbolism. He was here on our last discussion. I might try to get him again if I can. And I also saw Douglas Martin in the chat.
Mm.
And Douglas Martin is a king on this stuff. I mean, no, he probably wouldn't like the term king, but I don't mean that. I mean, he's like very masterful on his understanding of history. And you can see him in the Seed conferences. You can find him on seedtruth.com and Cubbyhole. And all the Seed conferences, Douglas Martin takes you back to the solar cults, to the pyramids, to, you know, way back in time. And I totally recommend looking at Douglas Martin's work. I've learned so much from him.
Adept.
And I also wanted to share this other quote. Leslie Powers said, objectivity involves shared definition and a method of measurement that can be corroborated. I like how she put that.
Beautiful.
Yep. Sure that.
Well said.
Marvin at Join the Internet. People want to check out at Join the Internet. and tell people about Easing Into Waking Up.
Yeah, I just made a new channel called Easing People Into Waking Up, which is the name of the project that I'm working on as well, with the goal of easing people into waking up. There's three skills lacking across the masses. It's critical thinking, emotional intelligence, and what I call hyper self-awareness. And until that improves, I think the masses are not going to accept the truth, because it's really difficult to.
Awesome. Excellent, man.
Thank you.
Terry, you have any last things you want to share before we cut out tonight?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I learned a lot, as always, you know. Yeah, Angela said, I cannot wait to rewatch. I agree. This one is one for the books.
Right.
Have a good birthday, brother.
Happy birthday.
Another solar lap.
Yeah. Right.
And that is a symbolic time to kind of look at where you're at, right? You know, some people don't like birthdays or celebrate them, but I always see it as a symbolic, hey, I've come around another year. This is sort of the marking point of that. How do I want to review that? You know, just kind of like we do at a New Year review or something. We can create our own symbols and rituals, and we kind of have to rediscover and recreate positive rituals, because our society has put negative connotations on all these things. So, folks, check out, if you're on Facebook, go to my page or Will's page, and you can find the link to contribute to Joe Murray. He was an awesome presenter and musician that has been part of our funnel conference, and he's going through a lot of pain right now and struggle, and he could use some help. So I'd recommend people to go over to Facebook and find me or Will Keller and make a donation to Joe Murray. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful night. Look forward to seeing you back here same time next week. And I'm going to have an interview with Brandon Martin that I'm super excited to share with you. Thanks for coming, guys. And send me your clips and send me some slides if you want to get involved with the show. I will use your material if it fits in. If we can find a way to fit it in, I will. And I appreciate everybody's help. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Appreciate y'all. Have a good one.
Appreciate y'all. Have a good one.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, later on, guys.
Hello, this is Chris Jansen. Welcome to the End Evil Podcast. We'll be right back.